Support for this podcast comes from Progressive, America's number one boat insurer. We've all made mistakes on the water, but there's one mistake you shouldn't make: being uninsured. With Progressive Boat Insurance, you can choose coverage for most mistakes you or other boaters could make, helping you float carefree all season long. Quote today, Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, number one rating based on boat market share data from ratefilings.com.
Save big on your next project right now at Menards. From mold and mildew stains and hard-to-stick surfaces, preparing your paint project has never been easier than with Bullseye 123. Zinsser Bullseye 123 Primer is an all-purpose, high-performance, water-based primer for interior and exterior residential, commercial, and industrial applications. Save big on Bullseye 123 Primer. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
What a marvellous champion. He takes two rights at the end, and that surely must be the end of Pedrosa's reign as champion. Everybody in the place is acclaiming McGregor the victor. But to make it official, we have to wait for the official score. But McGregor is hoisted on his hands and shoulders. They've already decided that there is only one winner. And they are surely right.
Yeah, can you believe it? That moment is 40 years old. Well, almost 40 years. In a few weeks' time, it will be the official anniversary, the 8th of June. And actually, to mark it, there's going to be a special screening of the bout in the Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan Town. It's all been organised by Scott Murray and others. I'm going to give you the details in a few moments on how people can get tickets to it, because you will want to get tickets. It's going to be a great, great night, and in attendance will be Barry McGuigan himself, who I am delighted to say is with me now. Barry, how are you?
I'm great, Kieran. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Listen, all the better for talking to you. Can you believe it's 40 years?
Yeah, incredible, incredible. If someone had said that to me, you know, you'll be alive in 40, you know, because my poor father passed away at 52. So I've outlasted him by 12 years. But yeah, you know, an amazing night. And he was there that night and he sang Danny Boy, and just unbelievable. And we almost got 19 million people on the BBC. I don't know how many they got on RTE, but they were there as well. With Jimmy McGee, and what an amazing night. 25,000 people, 14,000 of them travelled over from Ireland, north and south. A massive audience on the BBC, one BBC Sports Personality of the Year, WBA Fighter of the Year. It was a mammoth year for me, 1985.
How did you feel in advance of the fight and the weeks, the days leading up to it?
Well, I think we got in midweek. We got in around, I think, with Wednesday or Thursday. The fight was on Saturday, and you weighed in on the day of the fight, and it was in Leicester Square, and there were, I don't know, there must have been 5,000 people in Leicester Square. It was at the bottom of the, whatever the little building at the bottom of Leicester Square was, and it was a big gradual build up. And the interesting thing is, Kieran, I always knew with his style of fighting that if I ever got a chance to fight for the title, he'd still be champion. He was champion, one of the greatest featherweight champions of all time, Eusebio Pedroza. He held the title for 7.5 years and made 19 successful defenses. And I knew that he was an endurance guy. He could fight on the inside, he could fight on the outside. He was 5'10", so he was big for the weight, but very strong. And I always knew it was going to be a hard fight, and I knew that I was going to lose the early rounds. And the build up to it was on Sportsnet during the week and on RTE, and then it was just a big gradual build up. We went over, as I say, I think Wednesday night. And then I had to watch my weight and train, obviously, to keep on the scales, or be on the scales and on the weight on the day of the fight. And it was before we had day before weigh-ins. So I weighed in, I think we arranged it for about mid-morning, 10:30 in the morning in Leicester Square. there was a huge bunch of people there. It was so noisy, and I suppose to an extent intimidating a bit for him, but it was better than coming to Belfast, because that would have been hugely intimidating for him, and he wouldn't come to Belfast because of the troubles were flaring and all that sort of stuff. So it was an amazing night, and then as soon as you get off the scales, get something to eat, get something to drink, and then go back to your hotel, rest and relax, and get ready for the fight. So that was the way it was. But there were so many Irish people all up and down Park Lane where we were staying, and it was bonkers, you know.
I'm always interested with sports people. They tend to fall into two camps, be they competing in individual sports like yourself or even team sports. Some of them, they don't remember any detail about, you know, fights or matches or games, whatever it happens to be. And others remember things like granular detail. And I just wonder, which are you? Could you now, with your eyes closed, talk me through blow for blow that fight if you had to?
Yeah, I absolutely could. I'm the one that remembers all the fine detail, everything. But yet I forget so many stuff. So I'm getting to that age, I'm 64 now. So Sandra and I sort of joke at each other, you couldn't remember that, could you? And she said, no, I could remember it. But anyway, I remember the finite detail, everything about it. You know, I knew the fight was going to be difficult. And I remember coming to the ring, for example, and Davy McCauley was on the undercard. He fought a guy called McDermott from Glasgow. And we had a couple of other guys that were on the card as well. So it was a gradual build-up. And I was in the home dugout or the home dressing room and the away dressing room. So I stayed in the home dressing room, and you could feel the whole ground shaking because those old dressing rooms were underneath the stands. So it was very, very noisy. And of course, you know, you'd be a sort of countdown to it. And, it's interesting. A lot of people didn't realize that it was the very first fight that the BBC done live. They hadn't ever, they'd recorded loads of fights like Ali and Cooper and Ali and Joe Bugner and all of that sort of stuff. But they'd recorded it, edited it, and put it out. This was the first one that actually went live. So that's why we went to QPR, because that's right behind Broadcasting House, back just off Shepherd's Bush in those days. So it was close to where the boxing was taking place. I suppose they needed it in case anything went wrong. Des Lynam was presented from the studio with Alan Minter, former middleweight champion. And then ringside was Harry Carpenter. And I think he used Bruno a few times for a little bit of commentary and color commentary during the actual fights before. But in the main event, he just done it on his own. He was like extraordinarily good. Amazing commentator, and it was a phenomenal night. And I remember, you know, it took us, I think, about 10 minutes to get from the dugout to the inside the ring, because although it was the beginning of sort of getting sort of modern security, but we didn't have enough security guys. They put up these like metal sort of like fences to try and create a space where we could walk, but the fans just took them out of the way and walked in and just clamoured around me. So it was a very slow process to get to the ring. Then Dad got up and sang Danny Boy, and then, you know, come together, bell goes and get on with it. We had the WBA had a referee called Stanley Christodoulou, a South African guy who was an amazing, he'd refereed about 150 to 200 world title fights. So he was amazingly good. They needed somebody agile because, you know, we were moving around the ring a lot, and they insisted on a minimum of a 21-foot ring inside the rope. So you couldn't box in anything below 20 feet inside the ropes, because world title fights had to be a stipulated amount, but you know, the ring size. So we got a 20-foot inside the ropes ring. But he was really good on his feet. His judgment of distance was great. He started off, he dominated the first couple of rounds, and then I was starting to get to moving my head and and trying to jab with him, because what you do with a guy who's good at range and when they jab, you always jab with them, because whatever chance you have of landing a right hand or a left hook, you're never going to do it unless you jab with them. So I practiced, and we trained and spent months and months getting ready for the fight. Had Mexicans in, Panamanian sparring partners, Puerto Rican, really sort of South American guys that had all the styles, and guys that were as similar to Pedroza as possible. So it was a long preparation, and I knew what I had to do. So really, he won the first couple of rounds, and I started to get involved in the third and fourth, and I was starting to get, I was getting closer and closing him down, and all the time being relentlessly aggressive, staying on him, keeping my head moving and snapping the jab. And in the seventh round, I nailed him with a right hand over his jab, dropped him, and all hell broke loose. Everybody screamed and shouted and jumped up and down. And I ran to the neutral corner, and I had the good sense to look to my own corner. My brother Dermot was over, sitting on the ring apron beside our corner. And he was going, calm down. You'll only get one chance here, so try and take this guy out now that you have him. There was about two-thirds of the round done when I dropped him, and he got up, and maybe even more than that, probably only about 35 seconds before the end of the round. And I ran after him, and he stuck his jab out, and I missed him with a swung of right hand, and I missed him by about that much. If I hit him with that one, he wouldn't have got through there. That round, definitely, he would have been down again. But he got through it. He came back at me. He won the eighth. I won the ninth. Had him in trouble in the ninth. Had him out on his feet in the 13th. But like the great, incredible fighter and champion that he was, he held on in there right to the end of the 15 rounds. So it was an amazing night. And I remember after even before the decision was given, people were stepping over the top of all the journalists that were ringside, standing on their heads and feet and shoulders and all to get into the ring. They just wanted to say, I was in the ring that night. So it was, and it took us quite a while to get people out. And then the decision was announced, and a guy called Danny Small was a guy from Belfast who was the MC. But it was an amazing night, just incredible. And I remember going back to the dressing room, and I only had one child at that time, my young son, Blaine, and he didn't really know what was going on. He knew it was exciting, but and we sort of handed him around to give him a cuddle and all of that. So and then went back to the hotel, and then we decided we'd come home on the Monday as opposed to staying. We were going to stay to midweek. And I got into Aldergrove Airport, and there were like tons of people there, and then got from there to the bottom of the main drag in Belfast, and we went up Royal Avenue on the back of a truck of 75,000 people there. And then we went into the City Hall and looked out, and it was incredible.
Yeah.
Then I went down that night to Clonus, 30,000 people there. And then 2 days later went down to Dublin, and 250,000 people had turned out to see me. It took me an hour and a half to go from the top of O'Connell Street to the Mansion House. It was amazing. One of the greatest days of my life.
Listen, it was one of the great nights in Irish sporting history, and so many people listening to this will remember it, and they'll love hearing your own memories of it. I actually had cause to think about you recently because, you went through a period like anybody does in your situation where different communities are trying to claim you. You know, is it one of us or one of them, all of that stuff. And you came out the other side of it, and you even talked there about, the fans north and south, the numbers of them who travelled, 14,000 to London. So many people in Britain as well had this great regard for you. And what caused me to think about you was McIlroy, actually, who had gone through a real similar experience of, of the whose side is he on kind of debate that people are mad to have always about people from the north or near the north. And he's come out the other side of it. And he's come out really successfully, I think, has he?
He's an amazing guy, an incredible golfer. and just a lovely kid. And I know what he has to deal with because, well, there isn't the battles going on in the street that there were when I was around and people dying every day. And I mean, that was, and I was pretty sure about, I was never going to get involved in any politics. And, you know, the two things that we can do to the best of our ability without involving politics is sport and music. So I didn't want to take sides. I'm a Catholic, I'm a proud Irishman, but my family are all from the six counties and entitled me to box for the British title and the European title and fight for the world title. I'm very much Irish, but I didn't need to draw the tricolour on my head and sing the soldier song. I didn't need to do that. That was not the time to do it. It was it just wasn't. And it was a time that you would try and preach harmony and peace and tranquility, even for a few nights of the year where you would have, I had both sides of the community coming together, you know, leave the fight to McGuigan. That was the slogan. And that's the way I felt about it. And so did my manager, Barney Eastwood. We very much were in unison about that. And it was really important to us that we provided the nights that we were fighting, that people could come and travel to see us and not sit in the arena and feel threatened and feel intimidated. That was exactly the opposite of what I wanted them to feel. I wanted them to feel togetherness and come to support me. And the one thing they had in common was they wanted me to win, you know, and that was an awful, that meant a lot to me.
Well, I said it right at the outset. The big event happening is in the Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan Town on the 8th. And it's actually going on afterwards to London and Birmingham and Bristol as well. So there's other events happening. But Barry's going to be there.
We're not interested in those. We're
no, exactly. Yeah.
At the June, and it's a 12 o'clock start. So it's a sort of luncheon. And it goes
great.
On from 12. And we think it'll probably go on to about 6 o'clock in the evening. Very much hope as many fans as possible come along to see me. You know, I want to talk to them in detail about that night and all of the ramifications afterwards and the fun we had and, you know, still heavily involved in the game, Kieran, and my son has trained 10 world champions, one of the best trainers in the world, and still got involved with fighting. We've got two female world champions and we've got an outstanding super lightweight and we've got a cruiserweight on at the weekend on the undercard of Ben and Eubanks. So it's, you know, still into the sport in a big way, write about it every week in the Daily Mirror. So, you know, I live it and breathe it and my kids do too.
It's lovely to hear. Listen, if you find Barry has the details up on his social media, he's at Clona Cyclone, or just look for Barry McGuigan. Scott Murray is organising it as well, and likewise it's all up on his, or the Hillgrove Hotel have it up there as well. So Google any of the above, you'll find the detail. As Barry says, kicking off around noon and an all day event. It'll go right through until about 6 o'clock, and it is brilliant what they have on offer. So do look it up. Barry, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks a million.
Absolute pleasure, Mr. Cuddihy. Great to talk to you.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Support for this podcast comes from Progressive, America's number one boat insurer. We've all made mistakes on the water, but there's one mistake you shouldn't make. Being uninsured. With Progressive Boat Insurance, you can choose coverage for most mistakes you or other boaters could make, helping you float carefree all season long. Quote today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Number one rating based on boat market share data from ratefilings.com.